Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Amick,
Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to
executives in the league is
not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I didn't tamper with the guy.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, coming to you on Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody. By the time you listen to this, the candy is going to be all over your house. Your kids are going to be fighting their blood sugar issues, but that's okay. Everybody hopefully had a great time. Here with our regular guys, we got Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. What's up, gentlemen?
I feel like you were projecting what your day is going to be like, or, you know, your next 24 hours.
That's true. Talking to two guys without kids in their house, that's all right. I'm on my dad island over here. Yeah, it'll be fun. You know, we got the house rocked out a little bit with spooky stuff. And so one kid's going as an anime character that means nothing to me, but he got a big old like Grim Reaper sword and a gnarly, evil-looking black gown. So we got some of that action happening here. What's your guys' Halloween looking like?
I'm in Miami.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I mean, mine could theoretically be weird. I mean, I'm in the middle of a road trip. I don't plan to, like, dress up. But if I go out and, like, have some dinner or something in Miami tonight, I have a feeling it could turn into a strange night.
Fred, tell me he's not the perfect candidate to just pivot perfectly into a Miami Vice costume with that slick back hair and that cool swag and that look. To me, that's the Slater move.
I could wear it great.
Yeah, except
on the white, pinks and white blues.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sam, maybe if I'm like, you know, in California or in my hometown or something, and it's like, oh, wow, Miami Vice costume. If I go walk on South Beach trying to pull off a Miami Vice thing, people will just be like, who's this random dude? Does he even know it's Halloween?
Right, right. Next, you should go to Disneyland and dress up as Mickey Mouse. Yeah, I hear you. Well, it's scary time. Hey, there's the segue, guys. Scary time in the NBA season. Today, we are going to kind of have an offshoot of a similar discussion we had last week when it was believe, don't believe. You know, what are you thinking is real right now in this early NBA season versus what is not? But more specifically, and shout out Mr. Katz for coming up with this concept that I think will be fun to get into and timely and definitely worth discussing, is it's believe, don't believe, the borderline contender edition, meaning we got a bunch of teams who are, you know, kind of playing well, playing medium, playing average, playing below expectations, that we want to share opinions and views and intel and insight on, you know, essentially where we think they are actually going versus what the record looks like. And guys, we're going to go out east, we're going to go west, but in honor of the guy who came up with the idea, let's start out east. Mr. Donovan Mitchell and his Cleveland Cavaliers are entering today 5-1, playing their tails off, looking incredible. Donovan has got that city on fire. I saw our Jason Lloyd wrote a very flattering column about how Donovan is better than he thought he was. I think he had 38-12 against Fred's Knicks. So that's also a fitting starting point of this conversation. Guys, what are we thinking about the Cavs?
I'm in on the Cavs.
We know that. Man, you actually called the Donovan Mitchell trade like early, I feel like.
Yeah.
But What? Tell me about this 38-12 he put on the Knicks. Like, you know, what was the general vibe of the Knicks fan base if that's going on?
It was the closest thing to a revenge game that I've ever watched that wasn't a revenge game. Like, it was amazing. You know, it means that, you know, when a guy goes up against his former team, he comes with a little extra swagger. He's going against them. You're
this
like,
this is the
oh, okay.
why didn't you
know,
trade for me game?
It's 2012 and Melo's going up against the Nuggets and that's a big deal. Yeah. And he's going to have a little extra pep in his step because he's going against his former team. Well, Donovan Mitchell, it's kind of a revenge game, but it's not a revenge game because he never played for the Knicks. It was just this weird vibe, and you could just tell he was going 100 miles an hour. He hit 5 threes in the first 9 minutes. Wow. In the first quarter, he had 5 assists. I mean, he came out just throwing haymakers. He had one of the best dunks of the season, too, because slicing into the middle of the lane, going to a spin move and then a right-hand slam, it was incredible. I mean, he played great. I said that the Cavs should be a dark horse contender, like Slater referenced, before they were even out there to go get Donovan Mitchell. I just thought it made sense with their young core.
That is true. I remember that.
I said that the Cavs were the dark horse team in the East before they traded for Donovan Mitchell and thought they had a chance to win 50 games without Donovan Mitchell. And now that they have Donovan Mitchell, and now that they're playing really freaking well and they haven't even had Darius Garland, man, why the hell am I jumping off of them now? Like, they're right now, they are fifth in offense. They're third in defense. They're second in net rating. They are by far the best three-point shooting team in the NBA to this point. They made 23 threes last night. Kevin Love is playing out of his mind. And meanwhile, like, they haven't really gotten anything out of it. They had one big game, 41-point game from Caris LeVert, and that was about it. He's shooting like 34% so far. Everybody is shooting the lights out, and they don't even have their best three-point shooter in Darius Garland. I think Garland and Mitchell are a wonderful fit together. They make perfect sense offensively, and they have the rim protection on the back end with Mobley and Allen to be able to make up for those guys' deficiencies defensively at the top of the defense. Like, Cleveland is... I'm not picking them to make the conference finals. I'm not going that far, but like, if they get a good draw, like, they're in the mix. Like, there is a non-zero chance that Cleveland ends up winning at least a couple of playoff series. And I like them for next year and the year after that, when those young guys get even better.
Can I submit a candidate for best non-revenge game?
Please.
So is the criteria that you it's a revenge game, but you never actually played for the team. I assume that's what we're calling it. The Jordan Bell cash considerations game. Do you guys remember that one?
Would it be on brand here, buddy?
Do you remember that one?
I actually do.
Yeah, of course you do. It was a big thing at the time. The Bulls, for anyone who doesn't remember, the Bulls traded the pick to the, like, it was like 35th overall or something, early second round pick to the Warriors for cash. He looked like a steal for where the Warriors got him. He was blocking shots. He was turning to the Bulls bench and doing like the money sign and stuff. And then they went to Chicago a few weeks later, and like the Bulls fans, who were just so distraught that they like sold Jordan Bell in the draft, were wearing like cash consideration shirts. I remember a radio media member came into the Warriors locker room and gave Bell a cash considerations Bulls shirt. And he was like wearing it in the locker room. So that's my candidate, especially because it's kind of funny in retrospect that was such a big deal.
Wow. Very on brand. What do we think about the eventual merging of the Garland Mitchell backcourt? I just looked it up to remind, I didn't know Garland's status. So he's got the eye injury, seems to be coming back relatively soon. I mean, it's one of those things where we sometimes see injuries just elevate, you know, a guy in the way that it seems to have, you know, Donovan's not really sharing the ball all that much right now. What do you think of that eventual pairing, Mr. Katz?
I think it's really good, to be honest. Like, Donovan Mitchell isn't like your go-to run the offense point guard. There are still moments where he'll get into the lane and he'll miss a corner three shooter. He'll go up with two guys on him, and he's been hyper efficient, and he's shooting like 46 from three. And that's not going to last on his volume, but he's really good when he has an outlet who can be like, you run this pick and roll. And Garland, meanwhile, he's a score first point guard, but I don't think of him as a selfish player. I think he works with guys very, very well. Those two guys, being able to take you off the dribble. They have two guards who can take you off the dribble, break you down off the dribble, and are also going to be extremely valuable as spacers off the ball because you can't leave them open because they're going to hit the shot. The pull-up three is tremendously valuable in the game. And Garland last year shot better than 40% on pull-up threes. He was one of the two or best high-volume pull-up three-point shooters in the league. Donovan Mitchell is like 36, 37 on pull-up threes, which is really, that's elite territory on pull-up threes. Having two guys at the top of your offense who can do that with a top-notch rim roller like Jared Allen, with the way that Mobley is able to kind of just be a Swiss Army knife inside of that, man, if they can figure out what they're going to do with the three, I just think they're really dangerous. I think those guys work together so well offensively, and Mobley and Allen are going to cover up the stuff in the back end. Like, they were fifth in defense last year. They're third in defense right now. That team, Kevin Love has really settled in as an excellent bench player. He hit like 900 threes last night. I think they're good. I think they're legitimately really good. Maybe I'll eat crow, but I think that team really has a chance.
As an aside, we got to figure out some of these old idioms in English language. Eating crow, haymakers, you know, on Halloween, you know, that's where my mind is at. I don't know what all these things mean. Good stuff on the Cavs. I'm going to make a quick executive decision and say, for the sake of balance, let's jump back and forth between the East and the West. And I'm going to also try to jump back and forth between teams that are playing well right now, like the Cavs. And now in the West, there's not, we will eventually get to your Brooklyn Nets who are not playing well. There's not anybody playing as poorly as the Nets. So I'm going to pick one of the more, kind of bunch of 4-2 teams here. Let's dive over to the Memphis Grizzlies. And I'll lead it off, guys. I saw them recently. They are 4-2 right now. I don't know the schedule for tonight, so apologies to the listeners. We might be a game off here. But 4-2.
They're at Utah again tonight. So,
oh, that's right. Rematch. They had the old little back-to-back action. Yeah, or two straight games out there, for sure.
Revenge.
I saw them.
Can we call this a non-revenge game tonight? Yes. Utah.
Yes. Yeah, they've been on the road for a minute. They came through Sacramento, took care of the Kings. You know, I got to chat with Taylor Jenkins for a while, with Desmond Bane a little bit, and got a taste of kind of where they're at. You know, they, like I said, they're 4-2. They are dangerous. We know in the offseason, our John Hollinger wrote what I thought was a really good piece about how they didn't do a lot. They kept their powder dry this summer in terms of improving this roster that came so close to knocking the Warriors out of the playoffs. That was one of the criticisms. They are leaning into development and essentially trying to get a good sense early on what some of their young prospects can do with Jaren Jackson Jr. still out. And going that road, and we'll see what they do, if anything, before the trade deadline. But talented as ever, I am a believer. You know, I don't know where they're going to wind up, but they are absolutely a contender, guys.
They're weird. They got off to such a slow start defensively last year, and then remember they completely turned it around, and they're kind of doing the same thing again. Like, they're really struggling defensively, and that's a thing that, I mean, I'm with you. I'm not really worried.
Where are they at? 28th defensively right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I'm not really worried because they don't have Jaren Jackson Jr. back. And right. That is such a big thing for them to be able to have Jaren Jackson, because he covers up so many of the struggles that they are having on the defensive end and in the paint. When they have him and Steven Adams out there together, especially when he's able to play the four, when he plays the five, Jaren Jackson's foul trouble just goes crazy. He averages like more than 5 fouls per 36 and ends up on the bench too much. But when he can play the four next to Steven Adams, which I think is a big reason why they extended Adams and want to keep him along, because those two are a good mix defensively together, that defense, it's another level. They miss Dylan Brooks for some too, and that's obviously a big difference with him on the wing. But I'm with you, and I'm ignoring the most important part. Like, Ja looks amazing, man.
Ja looks amazing. He looks, I mean, he's MVP caliber, incredible. And they are, I did ask Taylor about Ja's development, and you know, predictably, but rightfully so, he talked a lot about all the stuff that we saw last year where it's Ja was great, but, you know, the defensive issues, playing off the ball a little bit more issues, and just trying to have him not be a spectacular one-man show, but be the guy that can lift a team. And, you know, we saw last year, they played so well without him. And that's where the conversation about their depth taking a step backward this year was so relevant, right? Because, you know, that's what made them dangerous. I mean, Ja could head for the sidelines and they were still dominant, and it remains to be seen if they can do that this year. The one guy that I didn't know a lot about going in, admittedly, and you know, got my attention when I was there, as I now delay because I lost my page here.
Jake LaRavia, I believe you're about to tell us.
I couldn't catch you, Slater. Say that again.
So Jake LaRavia, I think you were about to tell us about. What did he get, like 6 threes against
Killed the Kings.
No, that wasn't – it was their big, Satima. Now Schleck's going
to – Santi Aldama. Santi Aldama.
Thank you. Thank you. Good Lord. My Wi-Fi is not helping. Yeah. I mean, so it's a calculated risk by Zach Kleiman in their front office to see some of these prospects through. But again, they've got all their picks. They've got – you know, they made an offer on Kevin Durant back when that was – what everybody was doing, and you know, but as we remember at the time, it was an offer in which they wouldn't give up Jaren or Desmond Bane, which is, you know, not the kind of offer that's going to move the needle for Brooklyn. So they're in a fantastic spot, and I do think the roster, you know, could have some kind of, you know, improvements around the edges in the next couple of months.
Let me ask you, have you guys already chatted much about Desmond Bane?
No, we have not.
No, let's get into Desmond Bane because he is better again. Like he
looks like he like trimmed up. I mean, he's still obviously. I mean, he's like a big. He kind of looks like a football linebacker out there. He always has, but he seems like he's like really gotten in good shape. He's a little bit quicker. You know, last we saw him in the playoffs, that playoff series against the Warriors. Remember, it was like I think his back had tightened up. Like he was like very hampered in that series. It was kind of the undertold storyline of that series, which is mostly remembered for not only the histrionics, but also Ja going down in the middle of it. Bane was just limited. He was bad in that series. He's come back, looks in really good shape, and he's been great early in the season. He's 44% from three so far, which is like really what he is for his career, 43.5.
Damn near 10 a game.
25 of 56 on threes. And yeah, it's not just like, Ja, go make a play. I'm standing on the wing. I'm a catch and shoot when you get it to me. He's like doing off the dribble stuff. He looks like he's made another jump. This is only year three, but like the guy clearly improves like year over year.
I know it's early.
I think he's one of the five best shooters in the league now.
Yeah.
I think
you're right.
I think he really is. I think he's that good. Like he is unstoppable. And by the way, thing to watch. Ja is hitting like all of his threes. And if he's going to be hitting threes off the dribble, that's, I don't know what the hell you're supposed to do about that. Like, I mean, we're talking, you know, first team all NBA type season, MVP type season.
Right. Yeah. He's 56.5% from three right now. No, they look great. And Fred, because it's on brand for you, I'd be remiss if I didn't share a quick anecdote from your old buddy, Steven Adams. I walked through the tunnel to go to Grizzly shoot around. I see Steven. He says hello, and I hadn't seen him in quite some time, so I couldn't help myself. I said, "Hey, big fella, do I still have an open invitation to New Zealand if I ever get to that part of the world?" You know, because he's just a very hospitable guy who kind of runs around telling folks that they should come visit him in his homeland. To which he said, "Oh yeah, mate, I'll get you good fucked up." So that's the kind of invitation I like.
That's on brand.
Yes.
That's on brand.
Same dude who used to train train in the off season when it was like from the gym to the pub with some Guinness, and then back to the gym again. That's how he rolls. All right. So
when he was in OKC, Sam, he used to, the best Steven Adams training was that when he was in OKC, he used to practice his free throws. In between practicing free throws, he'd have a Thunder assistant coach who was now actually an assistant in Memphis named Darko Rajakovic. Darko used to uppercut punch him in the stomach in between his free throws when he was at the practice facility because he would get beat up so much in the game that he felt like it would be simulating a game if he just took uppercuts to the stomach from this like jacked assistant coach, Darko.
Right,
and
he'd say
he'd punch him, legit punch him in the stomach between. So he would just take a punch and shoot a free throw. It was...
I think one so. You said that, yeah. Darko's in Memphis now, right?
Yeah, he's in Memphis.
So
yeah,
I think that was reunited. The same coach. The other quick Steven story, I think pregame, he walks up to Darko as they were just shooting and guys are out on the court. And you remember the infamous white man handshake that Steven was known for when he would, you know, on camera for the local telecast,
Nick just Collison. Awkwardly.
Yeah, with Nick Collison, with the Thunder, he would awkwardly shake, you know, very uncomfortably, and it just was a little bit of a bit that he would do back in those days. So I see him go out, and I'm pretty sure it was Darko, and he's greeting the group of guys who are about to work him out pregame. And he goes for what appears to be the awkward white man handshake, although right as they go to connect hands, both guys pull back and then flip each other off. This is also apparently part of his
sounds
pregame
right.
Routine.
They're extremely close. And right. They have been for a long time.
So right. All right. Let's keep it moving. Sense. Yeah, it all makes sense. All right. Eastern Conference. Man, I couldn't get to this team quick enough. You're Brooklyn Nets. I'm saying you're because you're the New Yorker there, Fred. My goodness. 1-5. Your classic, you know, I've heard Zach Lowe just call them the on-paper team that they should have a, you know, an office supply sponsorship of some sort, because on paper they have all this talent, and he is correct, and I agree. And I did kind of go into this season, I mean, you know, far be it from us to pay attention to the basketball talent. So you did have that part of you that felt like, man, I know Kevin asked out. I know Kyrie was touch and go for a while and had a lot of drama, and we haven't seen Ben Simmons in a while, but my God, they got a lot of talent. But, you know, we are seeing everything go down the other direction, where the talent is not mattering nearly as much as the lack of chemistry. Steve Nash is clearly already at wit's end, trying to figure out how to get them going. But 1-5, and we of course have, you know, Kyrie and his his Kyrie activity that never ceases to amaze, or in a lot of cases offend. But a lot of stuff going on there. What do you guys think of the Nets?
Ben Simmons averaged 15.8 points, 16.9 points, 16.4 points, and 14.3 points his first 4 years in the league. Obviously, he didn't play last year. He's currently averaging 6.2 points. He's taken 5.7 shots per game. I mean, we're talking about a guy who historically has taken 12 or 11 per game, really, like from his rookie season, I'm talking about, and shot 55%, 58%, I'm looking at in his best year. He's shooting 44% right now. He's just not the same player. And that doesn't even get to the defensive end, where he is supposed to be there, you know, do everything, defensive player of the year candidate, which he was. Remember the year it was like him and Gobert? It was like a legitimate debate. Yeah. There's so much other
Draymond too.
Things going around the Nets, obviously. And we can get to them if you want. But like my biggest takeaway from watching the first six games, just from a basketball perspective, is like, that guy's a shell of himself. Maybe that's understandable. He's gone clearly through the back thing, the mental health stuff that he's talked about, and, you know, rusty from just not playing for a long time. And maybe he will get back to it. But as I watched that team, and you mentioned like the theoretical theory, you know, the theory of what we thought they could maybe be, well, that includes a much better Ben Simmons.
Yes, it does. Their defense is
30th.
Such a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think it's not quite this bad. Like, they're giving up the worst three-point shooting in the league. They're giving up 44% three-point shooting. And they're giving up – part of that is because teams are shooting, like, extremely well on wide-open threes against them. But they're also giving up, like, the fifth or sixth most wide-open threes in the league. I mean, they just don't cover anybody. And I think part of it is that Simmons just hasn't looked like himself, you know, defensively. I mean – with Ben Simmons, I figured, okay, we don't know what we're going to get offensively. We don't know how the fit is going to be with Nick Claxton and him out there together. And by the way, him and Nick Claxton out there together, I feel very confident saying that's just not going to work on offense. Like, it's just not. And I wonder if they're going to get to a place where Joe Harris gets into the starting lineup over Claxton, and you just kind of play with Simmons as your five, and you have Royce O'Neal and Harris and KD and Simmons and all those guys switch and try to get a lot of turnovers and run and play fast and all that. And maybe that's the way to do it. But man, like Simmons, you expect him to come out there and to be able to guard everybody and to be able to guard everybody at an elite level and to be able to stay in front of guys and force guys into the positions where they want to go, where they don't want to go. And we've seen some of that. We haven't seen that at like a first team all defense level, which is a high expectation, but the realistic expectation for a guy who played that way for years previously. It's just, he was supposed to be the defensive linchpin, you know, and it hasn't been the case. And they also just look like man, there's so many times where they just don't run down the floor.
He's also
just don't do it.
Ben Simmons is committing the strangest fouls. I mean, what is it? He fouled out of what, like two of the first three games. And it's like, I saw him miss a runner and then like Brooke Lopez had the rebound. Like Brooke Lopez is standing there, like has already secured the rebound. And he just like races towards him and tries to like strip it away and like hacks him on the arm. And you're just like, why are you going and trying to strip Brooke Lopez after he secured a rebound? It's just, I don't know, odd decision-making, but anyway.
It is. And I mean, the elephant in the room with Kyrie basketball wise and then off the court, it just, I don't know where it's going. It has to be going somewhere not good in terms of the Nets basketball prospects, because, you know, my God, you're now talking about years upon years of distractions for various reasons. And they were obviously at their wit's end in the off season, you know, with dealing with Kyrie. And that was obviously just mostly related to, you know, his vaccine choice and being away from the team. And then, you know, Sean Marks tried to take the hard line and it backfired a bit. And then they tried to kind of reunite this little marriage here. And the, you know, the latest situation where he is openly promoting material that is widely considered to be anti-Semitic, is that story, that situation is not going away, especially because he is being incredibly defiant on that front. You know, I do feel like we should take a second, just my opinion, to say extremely job well done to Nick Friedell of ESPN when he challenged Kyrie in his press conference and you know, and tried to get the point across that, you know, that platform that Kyrie has and that he makes use of so often, but then conveniently at times wants to pretend he doesn't have, you know, right now has hurt and offended a massive community of people. And he's not apologetic. He's not remorseful. He's not, you know, anything, not doing anything that would make this story go away. So basketball wise, where does that leave the Nets? Where does that leave Kyrie? And if you're Kevin Durant, where you were, you know, 5 minutes ago asking out, you know, where does that put your mental focus on the court? And it's hard to keep jumping between hoops and the off court stuff, but such is life with the Nets. You know, guys, Kevin, I just peeked at it here. Individually having, you know, great numbers like always, he's got one of the worst plus minuses on the team this year, -11.2. So even what KD's doing is not working.
I don't know what it currently is, but like 5 days ago, he had the worst plus minus in the league. You know, and that's not like, oh, Kevin Durant is playing so poorly, but they're getting crushed when he's on the court, which is
a good thing. Well, you're right. I mean, it's, you know.
You know what's wild? Here's a wild one. So it's only six games in, but this still blows my mind. The Nets' only hope was for KD, Kyrie, Ben Simmons, when those three are on the floor, they kill other teams. That is their only hope for them to be really good. Like, they have to annihilate other teams when those three guys are on the floor, because they just don't have the pieces. Joe Harris is a good player. Seth Curry is a good player. They're going to win because they have those three stars. That is how they're constructed. And those three guys are supposed to kill people. And I'm getting very 2021-22 Lakers vibes from them, where like the Lakers had their three guys. They were supposed to kill with those three guys. And then they ended up being a net negative when those three guys are on the floor.
What three right guys, now, Fred?
I got to pay myself a dollar. Damn it.
We talking Lakers later. Right. Don't worry about that.
Oh, I got to pay myself a dollar. You're right. I violated it. I mentioned Russell Westbrook. I mentioned the Lakers. I'm done. Just suspend me. But with Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving on the floor, the Nets are -6.6 per 100 possessions. And I know it's only six games, but man, the fact that they could have a six-game stretch where -6.6, like, that's really bad. And that's according to clean the glass. Like, that's really bad. You can't stand for that. They're supposed to kill teams. They're not supposed to be okay. They're supposed to destroy teams when those three guys are out there and they're getting wrecked. And they've had a tough schedule. I know they've had a tough schedule, but like, it looks bad.
Bad. They lose to New Orleans. They lose to Memphis, Milwaukee, Dallas, Indiana. Toronto's the only win so far. You know, by the time the pod comes out, they will have played Indiana. See what happens there. It's a doable schedule from there. Chicago, Washington, Charlotte, Dallas, your Knicks. So, you know, maybe they can get it going here. But I, you know, again, February and the trade deadline is a long ways away. But I would love to be a fly on the wall in the Nets front offices right now, because, you know, Joe Tsai, if anybody missed it, their owner, of course, had essentially admonished Kyrie online. And so much going on out there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Let's keep it moving and jump back to the West on a little bit of a happier, unexpected, unorthodox, unconventional story. Your Utah Jazz are just out there making the locals happy. They beat Memphis, and I saw a tweet from colleague Tanya Ganguly of the New York Times that, talking about the stadium rocking. You know, that's not what we expected because she was out there at that game. We did not expect Jazz fans to be bringing the house down here in late October, early November. They are 5-2. Can't wait to see Danny Ainge's endgame here. He's got all these players that are clearly extremely capable and that have not been sidelined and that are being given the freedom to go compete and win and right now be damn near at the top of the Western Conference. Guys, you're Utah Jazz.
They're fun. Like, they play crazy, crazy hard. Like, I don't know. I don't think we're talking about borderline contenders. They're not a borderline contender. But like yes, Markkanen has had some huge moments. Jordan Clarkson is playing much more unselfishly. Not that Clarkson was a selfish player, but he's, you know, a dude who goes out there and his job is to go get his own. And Kelly Olynyk is actually hitting every single shot in existence. And They're running these fun Olynyk Markkanen actions, and they are defending really, really well. Like Jared Vanderbilt is defending really well, and they play super hard, and they're fun. I don't know what the hell is going to be made of it, because they're you know, we all know that Utah wants to reach the bottom or went into it wanting to reach the bottom, but like, you know, Danny Ainge is also really, really, really competitive. He's like a wildly competitive person. And I wonder, they have so many picks from other teams. I wonder if they feel like, okay, we're missing out on Wembanyama. It's too late.
Right.
Our chances of getting number one, we're just realistically, we're not getting there. We're going to end up in a best case scenario with like the 7th best lottery odds. Screw it. Let's get the play-in. Like I'm not saying that's definitely happening. I wonder, yeah, at what point does that flip? Because like, man, Sam, you know, Danny Ainge is so competitive. Like,
well, but he's competitive. But like you hit it on the head a second ago. He's got so many picks that, you know, and again, the odds are so slim that even if you do Vic for Brick or Brick for Vic, I had it backwards, then, you know, that you're looking at 14% odds at best. It makes me think a little bit of, again, because I was around Miami recently as well, and we'll talk about them in a little bit here. I heard a story from one of their people that kind of lands here, because these high-level organizations that are competitive. Now, granted, the Jazz are under new ownership still, last couple of years. So we kind of remains to be seen exactly what the culture is, and I would not be putting them on par with the Heat in terms of caliber of organization, but they are a very solid organization. So Miami, a couple of years ago, and the way, you know, I didn't fact check this yet, so I think the numbers are accurate, but they start 10-31 a couple of years back and have this predictable conversation about, all right, is it time to tank? And, you know, that's what all teams do at that point. Well, it's Miami. They don't like doing that kind of thing. They gave their team a chance to kind of get their heads above water. They kind of flipped the entire season. They have basically the same record in reverse going down the back end. And when it comes draft time, they get Bam Adebayo. You know what I mean? Like, you're talking about the basketball gods and just kind of trusting that things will work out. You know, you get Bam Adebayo in the late lottery, and that's the way they roll. And I think maybe, you know, maybe that's the way Utah rolls. Although Danny's phone's going to be blowing up because these guys, when you talk about Markkanen and Clarkson and even the older guys with, you know, Mike Conley and whatnot, Malik Beasley, you know, Sexton's part of their future, but the phone is going to be ringing. They're, like you said, obviously not title contenders. They're just a fun story early on with a ton of intrigue about how they handle it from here. Welcome back, Mr. Yeah, Slater.
There might be a little bit of 2021-22 Wizards in them where they started 10-3 and then ended up winning 35 sure. games.
Right.
But, and the pieces there were weird and off, and like there might be a little bit of that. But also shouts to Will Hardy.
Yeah.
Even in a loss, it's like they're doing disruptive stuff. Like they lose to Denver the other night, but they hold Jokic to 3 of 10 with 6 assists. Like they're playing like a well-coached team right now.
It reminds me a little bit of the Dagnall hire in Oklahoma City. You go with a coach who's clearly aligned with the front office and what they want to do, but also has, like, you know, a history in development. And, you know, you kind of give him this testing ground with what, well, didn't he sign a, he signed like a 5-year deal or something like that. Like they definitely like committed to Hardy. Right. And you're not only, you know, trying to find if you can, you know, what players you can develop, and you're also trying to find a coach to potentially develop long-term. Isn't that kind of what the Heat did with Spoelstra back in the day? Spoelstra coached some bad Heat teams back in the day, obviously eventually the LeBron's teams and all that, but yeah, Hardy's been impressive, but that's generally what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, we'll see where it goes. I think, like you said, Fred, the Wizards comparison is a good one. I think that's probably where it heads, but a fun start early on. And again, we're probably going to see these guys on that who are on the Jazz now, you know, doing good things for contenders later on in the year. Let's keep it moving. Our list is still fairly long. Let's jump over back to the East, the Atlanta Hawks. You know, I feel like their fairly massive move to go get DeJounte Murray in the summer, you know, got lost in all the Nets shuffle and the Lakers drama and this and that. I mean, you know, that was a significant move for them and a franchise that was obviously trying to find the right guy to put next to Trae Young and, you know, and who has been, you know, which has been butting its head up against contention for a couple years and having some good moments, but not getting there consistently. And then obviously a big regression last year. Trae Young, just to drop a few stats here before I throw it to you guys, you know, record wise, Slater, you can tell me what they got going tonight if you have it in front of you, but they are 4-2 at present. Young Trae Young is giving them
at Toronto.
Okay.
So that's just a good game, by the way.
Yeah, no doubt. So Trae, I mean, he's doing Trae things, 31.5 points, you know, shooting a little bit down, 41% overall, 33 from three, almost 10 assists a game, you know, 31-10 almost is pretty tremendous stuff. DeJounte Murray is at 20 points a game. 7.5 assists. My goodness. I mean, I can't imagine there's another pairing that is giving you almost 18 assists a game. That's impressive right there. But they, you know, they've had some good moments coming out of the gate. What do we think of the remodeled Hawks here?
I just don't think they've played anyone. You know, I'm looking at their schedule now. Houston, Orlando, 2 wins. Okay. Lost to Charlotte, beat Detroit twice, lost to Milwaukee. There's not a result within there. I mean, they're 4 wins.
More than the Warriors could do, Slater, beating Detroit.
Hey, if you want to get into their problems, I mean, I generally agree with you, but I just mean like it's kind of a fake 4-2 start in some ways. Like these, you know, sure they're playing fine. I'm not here to like criticize how they're playing, but I'm not ready to, you know, red light blinking contender. Look what's happening over here. I do, the Murray trade is, it's early, but I think it's going to work out well. I mean, it's a little bit like Gobert. Should they have given up their future for that? We'll see. But you know, I saw him block Cade Cunningham in isolation to help seal one of those Pistons wins. Like, he's a really good player. They're probably better than even the team that kind of, you know, remember the team that went to the conference finals. So could that happen again? Some unlikely run to the conference finals, maybe. But I just think 4-2 is a little overselling it early. That's all.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't see them as contenders. We lose kind of focus on our question here a little bit. As far as that contender question, I say no. They're going to be a good team that wins a lot of games, and the Murray thing does help them. But they need more. I don't know if it's a John Collins move or what they end up doing, but I think they need more.
Yeah, I think the same of them as I did coming into the year. I think they're a play-in team. You know, the defense right now, they're 17th in defense, I think, and they're giving up a really low percentage on three-pointers, which is probably going to go up. So I do think it's plausible that team really does end up bottom half of the league for sure, and maybe bottom 10 in defense. And if that's going to be the case, it's just really going to limit them. The stat with them that I am watching is after years of them just not being able to win the minutes with Trae Young off the floor, and Trae Young's defense and him getting pulverized at times is what really gets the headlines, but they've just really consistently struggled to win the minutes with Trae Young off. They just don't have a guy to run the offense, and DeJounte Murray was going to help with that. The stat that I am going to be monitoring throughout the season is, are the Hawks winning the minutes, the Trae Young without DeJounte Murray's minutes? And are they winning the DeJounte Murray without Trae Young minutes? And right now they're both a minus. And that's not really concerning to me yet because it's early and they're integrating Murray and all that kind of stuff. But it's just, that is a thing that I'm watching, because if they can win the DeJounte Murray without Trae Young minutes, I think it might change my perspective on that team, because that just makes them consistently good for 48 minutes straight.
Good stuff. All right, let's jump back out west as we make our way through this list here. The T-Wolves, who I was a believer in going into the season in terms of their go big or go home approach, are currently 4-3. They have looked very mediocre. If anybody reading our John Krasinski can attest, he's been breaking that down very well. Not a great thing, and Fred, this will be another one for the swear jar, but when you know, our Minnesota columnist is writing pieces about how the Lakers, Pat Beverly, and the T-Wolves are both still in pursuit of the play-in magic that they captured last season. They can't even get it anywhere near that level. Minnesota has beaten Oklahoma City twice. You talk about soft schedules. Then San Antonio with also an L.
The surging Thunder.
Yes.
Those aren't easy wins these days. I'm trying to, you know, my audio today's not as good, so I'm trying to give Andrew to, like, at least, you know, I'm cupcaking him a little bit. But the Thunder looked pretty good the other day. Sorry, sure. Go ahead.
No worries.
We're talking Bulls. We're talking contenders.
You know what's crazy? You know what's crazy? The Thunder have not played any lineup more than 35 possessions yet. That's how much they're mixing and matching. Isn't that wild?
That is wild.
Mark Daigneault's just throwing stuff at the wall. And like, he's just throwing Isaiah Joe in with 5 minutes left and down 16. And he's just hitting 900 threes to beat Dallas.
I just wanted to know where Fred Katz, why that stat even like rolled, yes. You know, kind of like was presented
what's
in
happening
front of you.
In your life,
how did you get to Fred? The point where you're like, how many possessions is the most used Thunder lineup through 7 games?
Because you know what you should do instead of my life is purposeless. It is a series of rabbit holes on synergy and watching random ass pick and roll coverages, and I just can't stop.
You know what you should do instead of looking up OKC lineup data is
literally anything.
Put something on those walls behind you. You'd look like a serial killer. There's nothing on the walls behind you because you're
just
too busy.
Put up lineup data behind you. You know,
yeah,
that's what
Oh my god.
That's what
gosh.
I should do. I should have a whiteboard. I can have all the lineup data right over here.
Yeah. Sam Presti style. Remember his office in OKC yeah. that no one's allowed to see that's got, you know, the similar serial killer type vibes.
Don't describe it, Sam. You're going to find a horse's head in your bed tomorrow morning.
All right. Schleck, don't tell him out in OKC. Tumbleson's going to come for
So the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's what
yeah, you got it down this rabbit hole. Minnesota, man, I don't know. We'll see where they go. They,
hey, remember early on, our season preview, I put them out there as the potential, you know, dark horse for bad vibes, good team category, because it's just a tricky fit. I mean, and we're seeing it early on. It's just like hard to fit these guys all together. And like, obviously that was most highlighted the day that Anthony Edwards tells the world that he likes playing in small lineups when they just committed to this like long-term future with two of the biggest players in the league.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the Popeye's chicken saga. That was another bad vibes moment. Well, you know, when Carl comes in and judges the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was interesting.
They're fifth in defense, which is what a Rudy Gobert team should be. They're 22nd in offense. You know, they have time to improve those vibes, but yeah, Mr. Edwards, yeah, and Kat have got to get it together. You know, I don't know what other takeaways you guys have, but they look, you know, fairly average so far. They're going to win games, but they don't look like a contender by any means.
Sam, you're the defensive rating expert or ratings expert. Where are they right now?
In defense, they're fifth.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're fifth in defense, 22nd in offense, and ninth overall in net rating. So it's not awful. You know what I mean? Like it's the numbers are, you know, the offense is obviously the problem and they got to fix that.
They're going to win. They're going to win plenty of games, but it's just like, I don't know. A lot of times anytime we are describing these teams in the offseason or in the lead up to the season, you kind of are viewing kind of the best version of them. If everything's clicking, if Gobert's doing everything he needs to do well, and like, you know, Towns is being used optimally, it's like kind of the optimal version of these teams. Then they get on the court and you're like, this fit is weird. It's just weird,
right?
Particularly offensively. Like I saw Towns and Gobert trying to run like a big pick and roll, which like sounds dangerous in some ways for the opposition to cover, but it was like, man, this looks really clunky right now. I don't know.
As we sit here on Halloween, that reminds me of, you know, those costumes our kids have worn them when you have inflatable T-Rexes kind of stumbling around the neighborhood with, you know, next to in other inflatable dinosaurs. That's how that big on big pick and roll looks in my mind. All right, let's keep it moving unless we have any objections to the T-Wolves not looking like title contenders, because this other team we got plenty to talk about here. Your Philadelphia 76ers out east are 3-4. They got Washington tonight, so they could get back to 500. You know, wins against Indiana, Toronto, Chicago, losses against the Celtics, the Bucks, the Spurs, and also the Raptors. We know the story here. You know, are Joel and James going to figure their stuff out? Is Maxey going to elevate? Is Tobias Harris going to find a role that doesn't make him miserable? You know, is Doc Rivers going to make all this stuff come together? So far, not so great, guys. What do you think?
They just don't look very good. They've had a tough schedule, too. The transition defense has been bad. I know that's something that Zach Lowe has talked about a lot, where the transition defense just doesn't look right. I still think that team has a chance to really figure it out, though, because so much of their stuff is just kind of like inexplicable. Oh, they didn't run back, or, oh, they didn't go for that rebound, or, you know, whatever it is. It's like it makes it feel very fixable, and maybe if it's one of those teams that they feel like they haven't.
Can I contest on that one? I mean,
yeah, slaughter me on this. I'm probably wrong.
Like Joel in particular, like, it, what do you mean it doesn't make sense? He's a massive guy who's not does not appear to be in shape and who might not get there. You know what I mean? Like, it's Joel in particular is the poster boy for not getting back on defense, and you know, he got killed for it on opening night on the national telecast. I think we talked about that before. That to me, that aspect of it is not going to change. And some of the wings they have are, you know, Tyrese always gets up and down the floor, but you know, James not exactly known for giving his all in transition D. So, I mean, I don't know that I see that aspect of it getting better.
That's fair. You might be right. That's a very good contest, Sam.
That's what I do, baby. I'm like Gobert out here contesting.
I mean, it's concerning. I tend to, my default mode tends to be when a team is close and they're just not giving effort in the early part of the season, I assume it's going to turn on at some point. And I just need to see more than seven games of them not looking like themselves before I say like, okay, this is who they are. You know what I mean?
I do. Indeed. Slater.
I do like the Melton fit for them. I think he's been solid for them. I think that's going to be helpful.
He's a good player. It's the year of Philadelphia. The Phillies are about to win the World Series. The Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl. And then the Sixers are going to win the title. Like, that is my deep analytical analysis. I believe in the
clip this baby for the trend. Social media video right here.
No, please don't. I'm on my phone. It's not the day for that. I'm less worried about them than some of the other teams we're talking about. I think Embiid will play his way into shape. I think the fact that Harden is in better shape is a very good sign for them. And I do think generally they filled out the roster better with PJ Tucker and Melton, who Fred just mentioned. And I think they're going to be fine.
All right. I mean, I think it'll be fine. I'm not feeling them as raising the Larry O'Brien trophy and, you know, going
I'm not sure
I'm
feeling
to Philly.
Anybody, but like the Milwaukee Bucks right now has raised the Larry O'Brien trophy.
I thought we all predicted the Cavs to win the whole thing. I thought that's what was happening here.
Well, Fred's prediction. I'm not ready to go there yet. But I just like, I don't know. I mean, isn't some of the lessons of these early seasons not only the parity in the league, but like generally there's a lot of average basketball by like the good teams that we consider league wide, really?
Yeah. No, fair enough. All right.
Want to hear a wild James Harden stat?
Yeah, let's hear it.
29% of his shots are coming from 10 feet out to the three-point line. When the heck has that ever been a James Harden thing? Very odd trend. And by the way,
small sample size.
Where's Mike D'Antoni?
But it's a change in habits. Like that stat is indicative of a change in habits. And we talk about Harden as this tremendously efficient high volume guy throughout his career. And even last year, as he fell off tremendously, I guess last year he falls off and falls below efficiency. Like he's got a 50% effective field goal percentage right now, which is not crazy high efficient. He's taking only 6 free throws a game, which is his lowest number since he was a sixth man in OKC. Like I know I was the Sixers will turn it around kind of guy, but like, I don't know, like for all the talk of Harden's in shape, Harden's here. It's like, those are like, Harden is different. This is different. This is not the James Harden that we saw in Houston. It's just different.
Indeed.
Stylistically.
All right, jumping back over to the West, I am going to again make an executive decision here, because while I respect the heck out of Portland's 5-1 mark, and feel free guys to jump in with quick analysis, but we're going to get into the rapid fire part of the pod here down the stretch. Dame is out for at least a week or two with calf strain. He was off to an incredible start. Anfernee Simons doing some good things. Shaedon Sharpe showing some promise. But, you know, in terms of this contender conversation, they are the outlier here where, you know, nobody expects them to actually contend. But we didn't expect a 5-1 record either. Their schedule is about to probably punch them in the face. They have Memphis on Wednesday, back-to-backs against Phoenix in Phoenix, followed by at Miami, at Charlotte, at New Orleans, at Dallas, San Antonio, Brooklyn. I mean, it's a brutal schedule coming up. So we'll see how that goes. Any quick thoughts on Portland, gentlemen?
Not really.
They're better than I thought they'd be, I think. Oh, Slater, go ahead.
Well, I was just, you should probably answer this because you were going to actually talk about the Blazers. That schedule rundown from Sam reminded me of the weird fact. Maybe it's because I'm in Miami, but the Heat have this weird opening part of the schedule where they're going to be done with the Warriors, Kings, and Blazers within like 15 games of the season started, because they just went and saw those three on the road last week. And I'm here right now, Miami. They're about to play Warriors, Kings, Blazers coming up and be done with them. I don't know. It's been, that's the other thing about this early season. Some of the quirks of the schedule play in so much to these records we see, these sample size stuff we see. But sorry, they Fred, actually discuss the Blazers. I'm sorry for another tangent today.
Man, you got any more Jordan Bell stories?
Yeah, I have a lot of Jordan Bell stories. No.
Light a candle, I mean, brother.
We can talk about, yeah, there you go. That, I was hoping you would reference that. Back to you, Fred.
I just think Dame looks like Dame. And that's just, we didn't know, you know, he missed so much last year and he's in his 30s and you don't know. And now you watch him play and it's like, okay, well, that's just Damian Lillard out there just hitting his pull up threes and
by the way,
nuts and averaging 30.
I would say good point. Counterpoint, he just strained his calf after about 5 games. So as we talk about, you know, his body holding together, that's also happened. So.
That is very true. The other thing is they're playing okay defense. Like they're top 10 in defense right now. I don't necessarily think that's going to hold, but they haven't had Gary Payton II out there yet. And obviously, he's tremendously important for them defensively. And like this team has been bottom four in defense. How many years in a row? I have this written down. Bottom four in defense 3 years in a row and bottom half of the league in defense 6 of the last 7 years.
Not as many years as Sacramento. I got to be on brand with that. Yes.
That is true. But that was a big thing that Chauncey Billups talked about wanting to change when he came in, the defensive culture. And obviously it didn't take last year. But I do think it's plausible. I think they just have better defensive personnel right now. Jeremy Grant has worked really well for them in a little bit closer to that kind of Denver role than he was in Detroit. And when they get Gary Payton, I think they'll be better. I think that's a play-in team, though. I think it's a play-in team, and I think they're like a feisty play-in team.
Good stuff, good stuff. Going back east, I was looking forward to talking about our final East team. I'm actually going to spend my afternoon writing about these Miami Heat. You guys can relate, you know, these days now that we have locker room access again. Some nights at the arena are better than others. You know, when I saw Memphis, for example, enjoyed seeing their people, didn't end up getting much time with their guys. And it helps us understand kind of where they're at and take a pulse on their group. So with the Heat, and kind of contrast to Memphis, got some really good time with their guys. Talked to Jimmy Butler for a while, talked to Kyle Lowry, Bam Adebayo, and Tyler Hero. We'll have a little bit of a, you know, shameless plug here for when the story comes out, have a perspective piece with all four of those guys weighing in on their 2-5 start. So they play Slater's defending champion Warriors tomorrow, the day the pod comes out. And Jimmy, true to form, and I'm not going to lie, last couple of years in terms of media interviews and just personalities and guys that I've enjoyed having sit-downs with, Jimmy's on my short list because he is a extremely confident, fascinating, compelling person who never shies away from either a challenge or a soundbite. And so sneak preview of that story. Jimmy tells me the other night that we're going to be fine. We are going to win the fucking championship. That's what he declared. You would have laughed if you saw my response. Cause I think I literally said to him, I looked at him sideways and I said, so wait, say that again. and he repeated it and he said, we're going to win the championship for the sake of, you know, of making sure I get it correct here. Let me pull up the direct quote. It's growing pains. It's not bad. And we're going to be just fine. We're still going to win the championship. And I don't care what nobody says. Count us out. We're going to win the fucking championship. I'm telling you, I don't give a damn that we started 2-5. So what do you guys think?
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I do too. I can already see it as like a quote board, you know, Athletic tweets out.
That's already in the works, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm not super concerned. They're 2-5, but I don't think they're going to win the championship. I do not agree with them. I don't think they have the personnel for it. I think they're going to do what they always do. They're going to be like super feisty in the playoffs. They might win a round we don't expect them to. They might push a team like they pushed the Celtics last year. But at every point of that Celtics series, I always thought the Celtics were going to win up and till Jimmy Butler had a three really to go to the finals essentially and missed it. But so maybe they surprised me, but I don't know. They were playing like Udonis Haslem the other day in Sacramento.
8 minutes, man. 8 minutes.
Yeah, I know. And just, you know, they're starting Tyler Hero. They're starting smaller. They're very exploitable in those lineups. I just don't think they're good enough to be considered a true title contender. But they would say I'm wrong about that, and we will see.
What do you think, Fred?
I say this cautiously because they always outplay their talent level, but I just struggle to see them being a high seed this year. They're so shallow, and I don't really see how they're going to make it through the regular season because, like, Jimmy Butler misses games, you know? Like, Kyle Lowry's in his 30s. Like, are you going to expect him to just be out there for all 82? And
Lowry doesn't really... He's 36.
Right. Yeah. And he doesn't create his own shot anymore the way that he used to. He just doesn't. And they're just so shallow. Like, it feels like they have seven guys who Spo trusts, and that's it. And a lot of those guys are, like, exploitable when you play against good teams. You know, Max Strus is exploitable and Gabe Vincent is exploitable. And even Tyler Hero, who's a very good player, is a guy you can go at on defense. And, like, you know, they're kind of out on Duncan Robinson now, right? Like, he's really not playing very much at all. And sat for a lot of their playoff run. And I don't know what it is. Like, I think the defense will be better than it's been. And I don't think 2-5 is indicative of the season they're going to have. I think they're a playoff team and I think they have a good chance at being above the plan, but I think they're a lot closer to six than they are to one. Like, I don't know. The Heat, for example, they're giving up a ton of corner threes, but they always give up a ton of corner threes. It's part of their scheme. And so it's like they're tough to evaluate in terms of just like the shots that they're giving up right now defensively.
To that point, Fred, real quick, last year on the three-point front, I looked it up the other day. I think they led the league in opponents' three-point percentage around 33, and it's up around 40 right now. And so that's a major area that's gone in the wrong direction so far.
Totally. It's a great point. I mean, when it goes bad, it looks really bad because of the way they defend. Like, if you're going to give up a lot of corner threes and they're going to shoot really well, it's going to look really bad. So I don't know. I think they're better than they are, but they're far from flawless. Like, they've got some issues they have to make up. And if we're going to say they're contenders, it's because we think Jimmy Butler is awesome. We think Bam Adebayo is awesome. And we think Eric Spoelstra is awesome. And we'll find a way to figure it out because sometimes he just does.
Yeah. I mean, their explanation so far that at least I think Bears kind of monitoring versus kind of burying of their prospects is that Tyler starting has been a major development that, and I talked to him and he's clearly still finding his way. He openly talked about not being used to not having the ball as often as when he was, you know, the sixth man candidate, or winner rather. The PJ Tucker absence is a massive thing that a lot of people mentioned to me when I was around them, you know, what he brought and what they miss now. You know, you mentioned Strus and his role changing a little bit from last year, Caleb Martin. So a lot of pieces, like I mentioned to Jimmy, like, man, people forget almost that you guys were one, you know, three away from shocking the world and getting back to the finals, and was admittedly kind of like trying to respect what they accomplished last year. And he flipped it the other way and said, man, I hate when people bring that up and talk about what we did last year. Like, I know we have a lot of the same players, but we have a very different team and we got a lot to iron out and a lot to figure out. And so he's kind of mentally making a clean cut from last year. And what I do love about the way his mind works is that he is, you know, he's in the middle of that chess game right now, trying to figure out where all these new pieces go and how they can make this thing work. So we'll see if they can do that. Let's jump back over as we wrap up here to the West. We have not talked about the New Orleans Pelicans coming in at 4-2 currently. You know, good moments, some injuries. They've been without Zion at times and Brandon Ingram and Herb Jones and still won and showing fight and Willie Green can coach and lots to be excited about out there. What do we think of the Pels, guys?
Deep, super deep. I think you've seen it in these games where they've you know, haven't had Ingram because he had a concussion. They missed Zion for a couple games. And I know they did win in Phoenix without, you know, some of their best guys, but they beat the Mavericks at home. I don't know if you guys watched that, but you just...
Yeah, I did watch that.
They drafted well. Yeah, you know, Alvarado obviously was a fine. Herb Jones, what a pick that's been. Trey Murphy looks great. He was kind of a later lottery. It's tough to like envision the Pelicans in the West Finals and in the NBA Finals, and we don't know about their top level, you know, how the Zion Ingram mix will work, you know, when teams are scheming deep against them and the defenses are like at a playoff level. So I don't know about like contending status, but man, they just, to me, profile as a really, really good regular season team, because a little bit like Memphis last year, Zion can sit, you know, 7 games and you could theoretically go 5-2 in those games, just because I think they have rotation caliber NBA players all the way down to like 11 on the roster, basically.
No, I'm with you. To me, they're kind of maybe the most fun team on this list from the standpoint of you don't really need to decide what you think right now. It's all so fresh. It's all so new. But the talent level is clearly good enough that you just sit back and watch and hope that they're healthy. Like every team, we like health. And then B, see where the chemistry goes, you know, see where the rotations go and see how good they can be. There's just no way we can know right now. But if you talk about the best case scenario of what, you know, that core of Pelicans, you know, with Zion and BI leading the way with CJ McCollum, can do with the depth that Slater talks about. I mean, are they capable of being contenders this year? Like, yeah, stranger things have happened for sure. Not ready to say that just yet, but I think the talent's there.
Can I make a plea?
Please do.
This is on behalf of giving props to Will Guillory, our wonderful Pelicans beat writer, who has pointed this out to me so many times, and he's so right. Can we all stop saying Trey Murphy the third? His name is Ken Murphy the third. The reason he goes by Trey is because Trey is three. And everyone says Trey Murphy the third. But he's not the third Trey Murphy.
What spot is Ken Murphy in the rotation?
He's Ken Murphy the third.
Fred, here's
what
I'm...
He's Kenneth Murphy the third,
hold on a minute.
Or he's Trey Murphy, make up your mind.
If
and
you're
he doesn't
doing
go
by the way,
that Ken, so we're going to call him Trey Murphy, not the third.
By the way, that reminds me, I wanted to talk about Jordan Bell's name really quick.
Wow.
No. Sorry. Go ahead.
Fred, if we're doing a hierarchy of Pelicans, what number in the rotation is young Ken Murphy? Just pick a number, roughly.
Young Ken Murphy. Oh, man. Okay, so you got McCollum, you got Zion, you got Ingram. You got Herb Jones.
I mean, you don't got to go through the whole list. Just pick a big number.
I think I'm putting him five. Yeah. I think I'm putting him five.
All right, fine.
He's playing really, really well.
Wake me up when he's in the top three. Wake you up.
Yeah.
you can't make demands on what you're called until you're in the top three.
He's Kenneth Murphy the third, the fifth, is what he is.
That sounds like a character from Succession. All right, guys, we got through the list. Slater, I don't know what sort of Halloween antics you have going on in your hotel room. There's a ghost moving your phone all around. I'm staring at your ceiling and the art behind you and the pipes around you. You know, one of them pods. We went a little longer than normal. Wanted to give, everybody their just desserts. Enjoy the evening, guys. Appreciate you. And we will talk to you next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.